It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight as we have reached the final home stretch here for the Indiana Hoosiers, currently a half a game ahead of Iowa in first place atop the Big Ten standings. After a pair of home victories, held court against Nebraska 80-64 on Wednesday night after we left the air, and then Saturday night with the big rivalry game against Purdue, of course, 77-73 was the final. Hoosiers were up 19 or 18 late in or middle in the second half, and Purdue closed to within two before the Hoosiers got a bucket, maybe on a little bit generous call late, but it was a four-point victory at the end of the day, and that's the part that counts. Hoosiers, as I mentioned, in first place right now. Three games to go. Have to go on the road Thursday night to Illinois, and then next week Tuesday at Iowa for what's going to be a crucial game, but at this point they're all crucial when it's only a half-game lead. And Glass, we've said it all year, when they have had to win games, and especially at home, they have done that. They were faced with Nebraska coming to town as kind of the sleeper game, and then, of course, a big game on Saturday. And this is the one that's interesting because it was the polar opposite style-wise, the two teams, the large front court of Purdue against the shooting and backcourt, and just overall ball movement of Indiana, the defense against the offense, all these kind of things clashing. It was a very good performance by the Hoosiers. Again, you could take the last 7 minutes or so and talk about letting Purdue back into the game, but all in all, jumped up, stayed up for a long time, and interestingly held their own on the boards against a team who's been very good on the boards. But ultimately here, they did what they needed to do. They're still in position at this point to get the Big Ten championship. If they win what's in front of them, they still have everything right there. And at this point, that's exactly what you wanted. And you get a victory over Purdue in addition, too.
That's the good news. And if they win out, it's there. So everybody else would have more than three losses. And if Indiana wins out, they'll have only three. And one of those games is Iowa. So if you're wondering how that math works, it's quite simple. Beat the Hawkeyes on their home court and don't lose again, and you've got three losses, and everybody else has four, including Maryland, and everybody else after that has five. So there's no way for any of them to be goofy. So if you like math, it can work out. But the other part about that, Dave, is, and we'll talk more about that on Wednesday, is going on the road and doing it. We've seen really good, unbelievable road play Michigan, and then Penn State, you wondered, hey, what the heck just happened there? So I don't think it's in the barn yet, but Purdue, big rivalry game, 8:30 on a Saturday night. Should be fired up to play for that one. That shouldn't take much to get everybody up and ready. And we argued on Wednesday that, or not argued, but made the point that Indiana is best in basketball when they are making baskets and making other teams get out of what they do comfortably and have to chase them. And the Hoosiers did a great job of that, especially in the second half. The comeback, fine, no problem. It happens. You take your foot off the pedal. You're playing great. Places jumping, you're scoring, you're hitting threes, you're knocking down shots from everywhere. And Purdue didn't have enough offensive firepower, and we thought that would be the angle. The other angle in the game that you didn't think, you thought Purdue would have some more opportunities in and around the basket on the glass, but Indiana's post players, all of them, did a great job. They didn't concede position. They didn't concede rebounds. They played hard, and that's exactly what you need to do to win against really good teams with really big guys and everything else. And we thought Purdue would have to have a big game from the perimeter to stay in this. It wasn't going to just be easy entry passes and layups all night. Indiana wasn't going to allow that. But, again, you didn't see the wing players from Purdue put up any numbers that scared you. Rafael Davis, their senior heart and soul leader, had 0 points in a rivalry game, and he's been in this series a long time. And if you'd have told me that before the game started,
they have 5 3-pointers at home against Michigan State.
And doesn't make any and does that. So Indiana did what they needed to do. I thought they played very, very well. Their offense is better than Purdue's defense, and it's more proof in today's day and age in college basketball. If you have a lockdown team, you better lock it down because offensive teams are going to score. And what Indiana does, Dave, and this has been the theme for the last 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 9 games, when Indiana is balanced and they don't have to look to one place to get points, they are very difficult to slow down and stop. And when Juwan Morgan hits a three and Max Bielfeld hits a three and Colin Hartman hits a three, let's just keep going.
Seven guys hit three-pointers.
You have to pick your poison, and the poison is probably letting those guys shoot it more than not. Mm-hmm. And they went in, and when they go in, good things happen, and Indiana made a lot of good things happen. It was the first time. Here's some stats from the Purdue folks, which I think is very interesting. Purdue shot 59% and lost. On the road and lost. But they only got 18 shots in the first half. That's the other thing. Purdue made 9 threes. They were 9-1, making 9 or more threes, and they lost. It was their best field goal percentage against Indiana, Dave, since 1990. Think about that. Sure. Those numbers, if you look at them in a 59%,
vacuum. 59%, 27 of 46 on the game.
Looking at that in a vacuum, you'd think, wow.
Yeah.
How did Indiana pull that one out? Well, that Purdue also had 19 assists, first time they lost this year with that as well. So Indiana played well enough, and Purdue's 35-game winning streak. That's almost a full season of college basketball. 35-game winning streak when out free-throwing the opponent, attempting more free throws, comes to an end. So what did Indiana have to do? A lot of really good things.
Yep.
They covered them. They covered the post. They covered the three. They covered the drive. They covered everything. They didn't turn the basketball over, and that's how you beat really good teams anywhere, let alone on your home court where they are unbeaten in 2015-2016.
Well, here's what the Hoosiers did in a few different ways. The first thing they did on offense is they did not give Purdue a lot of chances without earning them.
They only had 18 turnovers. Shots. That's it.
Four turnovers on the game. That's a lowest in at least a year. I mean, it's a phenomenal number.
Purdue only forces 9. They're last in the league at that. So it's not a Purdue's defense, Dave.
Yes, but this Indiana team, as we know, is the worst in the Big Ten at turning it over.
And I think this is the point, because Purdue and Wisconsin play that similar style of defense where they make you grind, make you make the extra pass. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fall asleep and you stay sharp on your cuts and your ball movement and your dribble,
you'll find something eventually.
Because they're not up in your business.
But four turnovers, again, I mean, give the Hoosiers credit here, because that is a key number. I don't believe they had any in the first half.
Zero. 20 to 3 points off turnovers.
They were up 12 at one point in the first half. They stretched that out in the second half, but that's crucial for this team. It's hard to expect four turnovers a night from this team as quickly as they want to play, but if they do, they're certainly going to be difficult to beat. The other thing is they allowed Hammonds and Haas inside to have, take advantage of their opportunities. And Swanigan was this way also. They didn't make it easy on them. They made it difficult, but they also, they didn't foul. They didn't give them cheap points, all those sorts of things.
And they didn't give them second chance baskets.
At the end of the day, they fought them hard, though, on the boards. And that's the key here. I think we have a combined 3 rebounds out of A.J. Hammonds and Isaac Haas. That's 14 feet worth of guys over there that are among the best rebounders in the Big Ten. And the Hoosiers didn't give away anything.
And a lot of that was Indiana making shots as well. They shot it very solidly again. Purdue only had 18 field goal attempts in the first 20 minutes. 18. Yeah. They were only down 8. So if you looked at that, you'd think, well, geez, that's not a bad half on the road from Purdue. But what it didn't lead to, Dave, was shots that went up were missed, rebound by Hammond, put back dunk.
Right.
Shots that were put up by Davis missed, grabbed by Haas, put back and in, or Swanigan or whoever it was down there. So Indiana did their job on the glass. They didn't give Purdue turnovers, which, again, if you're not getting a ton of rebounds and you're not getting turnovers, you're not going to get any extra possessions. Mm-hmm. And Purdue was very efficient, 11 for 18 in that first half to stick around in the game. But when we come back, we'll talk about the reasons why Indiana led at the break. There were two of them, and they're the exact two guys you need at this time of year leading that charge.
Exactly right. We will talk more about this game and eventually here in Nebraska also when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Hoosiers victorious twice last week since we were last on the air. 80-64 on Wednesday night against Nebraska. Game no-brainer, just had to have. And then, of course, the more crucial of the two, I guess they're all crucial to win, but the more crucial of the two against one of the top 5 teams in the league. And your bitter rival, Purdue, 77-73 on Saturday night, Raucous Assembly Hall. helping along, and it was a very good first half for the Hoosiers. Again, on the defensive end, they did not give up anything extremely easy. You can't really, I don't know if you can call it a great defensive effort, because of the efficiency that you mentioned, Glass, that Purdue had. But what they didn't do is compound it with other stupid things and certainly giving them extra opportunities. Only four turnovers for the Hoosiers were big. But in the first half, what you got and what you need down the stretch certainly is the contributions of a pair of upperclassmen. You have a senior point guard. Everybody wants a senior point guard. You found out and you saw a perfect example why you want a senior point guard. Yogi Ferrell had 14 at the half. And he was followed along by the now resurrected, hopefully, Troy Williams, who's had a great two games, a great week for him. We'll see what that means, if anything, going forward. But 7 of 11 shooting for Troy, 19 points, only with one rebound, but a pair of assists and four steals. He was active, and that's what we keep saying about Troy. If he's active in the game, he's going to end up with production at the end of the day. And he's so key when he is active because he's so athletic, because he can get so many different places and cause so many problems.
How many personal fouls did he have?
He had zero.
Well, there's part of it as well. It's hard to be active in everything else when you have two fouls at the 16:53 mark. And if he's smart and gets out of the way to get into the way, well, Indiana's going to be a completely different animal to guard. And when Troy plays like this, now you know why. He's a co-Big Ten player of the week with Jordan Taylor from Penn State. Mm-hmm. This is why Indiana can be effective, because as you saw with Purdue was very effective. Listen to this, 5 of 6, 6 of 9, 4 of 8, 4 of 6. That's their front court starters. So they shot it really well. They didn't have a bad night. It wasn't 5 for 17 or anywhere like that. But Raphael Davis, how do you say his name? He played 34 minutes and gave him 5 rebounds.
Yeah.
An offer.
Yep.
Well, we've seen when Indiana has to play with Troy Williams for 24 minutes with 2 points and three rebounds or what it is. Mm-hmm. It usually doesn't end up very well. Now, Davis is a senior, so you can give him a little bit knock in a big rivalry game. Last time he was playing at Semi Hall, doesn't show up for 34 minutes, and he didn't hold down Troy Williams if he was guarding him. Did he hold Max Bielfeld to 10 or Thomas Bryant to 10? You guard Yogi to hold him to 18? Well, that's the point. The point is, what did you do? You did nothing. And what Indiana did was the pressure the offense put on them. Ferrell had 14 in the first half, and Troy had 14 in the first half. Mm-hmm. They had 28 of the 35. They scored just as many as Purdue did. And what that did in this game for me was the shots they took were fine. Where did you see out of control? Where
14 to 24 total in the game.
You saw maybe a step back three or deep two you probably could go without. Maybe it's a little heat check. You're at home. You're fired up. Okay, fine. But the point was the other players with Indiana weren't required down 20 to 12 to have to carry it. Mm-hmm. They put it on the broadest shoulders on that team. Yogi and Troy, the guys that have been through the most, the guys that have played the most minutes here, and they did exactly what you need to do late in the season against a top five team in your league, a ranked team at home, and that is perform. And they did in the first half. That got everybody going. Why? There was no pressure on Zeisloft to knock down shots. There was no pressure on Hartman, Bryant, Bielfeld, you name it.
No, I mean, your best players, your most talented players, whatever you want to call them, they've got to produce.
And they did. And it sounds so simple, but the algorithm to get Troy to do that night in and night out has not been cracked yet. Is it better when he gets involved? Yes. And I think the foul issue is a huge thing. Why? He can continue to be Troy. He can continue to be aggressive. He doesn't have to think about, well, if I drive here, am I going to get my third? Or if I'm a little out of control here, do I have to worry about getting my second? When he doesn't have to think and he can just play basketball and react and be athletic and be fast and be quick and be everything that those great things are from him, that's when Indiana's most effective. And that's what they got in the first half. So getting off to that start in half number one was fantastic. They really didn't take anything away from Purdue, but Purdue really didn't slow them down. For all this talk about Purdue and lockdown defense and this, that, and the other thing, they won the rebounding battle by 2, and they held Indiana to 77 points, and the Hoosiers shot 50% in the second half. They made 12 threes. They only got the line 13 times. I guess maybe in the Wisconsin school of not fouling they were, but there wasn't anything that Purdue did on defense that you said, well, geez, how is Indiana going to pick that lock?
In Big Ten games, Purdue was averaging 68 points against. So the 77, I mean, obviously it's a road game, but the 77, you're exactly right. Did they take anything away from Indiana? Again, both teams are rebounding, are good rebounding the ball. They both have large averages as far as plus minus in rebounding. So
but
both
Purdue's
teams,
the best.
That, I know, I understand that. Best. Well, Indiana's a half rebound behind them, or a rebound behind them. So, I mean, that gets missed a little bit. There's two teams that have that dramatic of an edge in the rebounding game, and it's Indiana and Purdue in the Big Ten games.
And again, there was no edge for either one of these teams in that. So where was the edge? The edge was in offense. And Purdue, they played their best offense kind of in the two-minute drill. The gopher broke, hey, we're down 19.
Exactly.
Let's move it quick. And in the first half-good look shot we get, then they start making them. And that's kind of where those field goal makes were coming from. They started hitting threes in transition. They started getting layups at the bucket because they were running up and down the court. But you know what? When you dig yourself a 19-point hole on the road, you're not coming out of it unless something special happens. And sure, it was close. Sure, there was a chance at the end. There's a call. Maybe you say, hey, how's that goaltending if Hammonds hits the rim and the ball never gets to the basket? Well, that's the rule. And Indiana made the plays at the end. When you dig a hole that deep, and we've seen the Hoosiers do this a couple times, the furious comeback has to be absolutely perfect. There cannot be anything. There can't be missed one-and-ones. There can't be anything like that. But when Indiana, Dave, they drug Purdue out 19 points. Purdue's vaunted defense that we hear about and only give up however many points, and you've got Hammonds is a senior and Davis is a senior, and you've got this and that and the other thing, and Haas is whatever he is. You got experienced guys there that got ran off the court for the first, I don't know what, 12 minutes of the second half, got ran off the court. They couldn't pick up guys in transition. They couldn't find matchups to even slow Indiana down. And you know what? Hartman only hit 1-3. Juwan Morgan only hit 1-3.
Hartman didn't hit one.
He didn't even hit one. He's one for three before.
Yeah.
And then Zizel didn't make any. Ananobi hits a three. Morgan hits a three. Mm-hmm. Bielefeld hits a couple threes.
Bryant.
There you go. Bryant's knocking down three. One for two. Tattoo took two of them.
Yep.
So you picked your poison. This Purdue defense, again, that's what they hang their hat on. They had no answers anywhere from anybody, and I give Indiana full credit for that. They stretched them. They moved the basketball. They didn't get hurry up quick where they were driving down lanes, jumping in the air with Haas and Hammonds in their way.
Right.
They played smart. They
only
played
two
under control.
For Purdue.
Right. Why? Well,
they weren't there.
You avoided them.
333-2665 is a phone number. Two things happened in this game in the front court for Indiana. The first thing is they removed Colin Hartman from the starting lineup, and they put Max Bielefeld in there. So you ended up with Bielefeld and Bryant early. We said they might do that. They did that up at
one played 20 minutes,
Michigan
one played
State.
19 minutes.
Understood. But a little bit different look, at least from time to time. I realize Colin Hartman played plenty. He played 20 minutes, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
How much, though, do you think is playing the two bigger guys together and then also bringing Bryant so far away from the basket? Dan Dockich made the comment during the game that he's pulling Hammonds and Haas away from the basket, and you saw that. He played a lot more at the top of the key, not necessarily doing a hell of a lot other than the three-pointer he made, but certainly you had gaps in there, and you only end up with two blocks.
Bryant was 2 for 6 from the field, so you can ask Purdue why they're guarding him out there. That's a great question for Matt Painter. Why are you guarding Thomas Bryant when he's 2 for 6? He's 1 for 2 from 3 and 3 for 8 total. So if I do the math on that, that's 2 for 6.
Yep.
He didn't kill you.
No.
It wasn't Thomas Bryant. So what it did was the space killed you. The space opened up things. And for, again, that's great that Purdue fell into that. That's great that we out-navigated them. We outmaneuvered them on our home court. And they didn't do anything to adjust to it. And that's fine. And what Indiana was, Dave, they were patient. And that patience shows in the turnover number, and it shows in the field goal percentage number. They weren't rushing shots. They didn't have to rush shots. Purdue switches a lot of screens, shuffles you, pushes you off into directions. When you had the open shot, Indiana knocked it down for the most part. And again, you know that Indiana can hurt you from the perimeter. But again, do you want Thomas Bryant making layups and dunks? Do you want Troy Williams having room to operate on the baseline? Or do you want Thomas Bryant and Bielefeld shooting 18-footers? To me, that's not even close. And thank you to the Purdue scouting report to do that.
Well, and Bryant and Bielefeld ended up with 11 combined rebounds. Haas and Hammonds, as we mentioned, ended up with 3 combined rebounds. Caleb Swanigan did have 8. Nice player, no question. But you dragged the big guy away. And again, Thomas Bryant's been very nice for Indiana, there's no question. But, I mean, Haas and Hammonds, you got two of the biggest guys in the nation at this point in college basketball.
And you didn't see him go zone. You didn't see him really adjust. And I thought, again, Indiana's offense was better than Purdue's defense, and that was the key. When you score points and you put the pressure on the other team, Purdue doesn't have enough guys to score, Dave. They get a lot of baskets from 4 feet and in, and if you hold your ground, and if you don't hack guys, and Bielfeld, Bryant, Hartman, OG, Morgan, we had enough bodies, 20 fouls, and you used most of them down there. Get your hands up, get your hands in the way. A.J. Hammonds was in Max Bielfeld's back pocket for most of the second half.
Yeah.
Had a hard time fighting a kid. And the reason you asked about Bielfeld and Hartman, you probably start with Bielfeld, why he's harder to knock off the spot.
You don't want Thomas Bryant to become irrelevant 2 or 3 minutes into the game.
He's a thicker player. He's got legs like tree trunks.
Yeah.
He's been in the wars of the Big Ten. He understands what it takes to fight another senior where he's not going to get little cheap moves or little cheap fouls.
And Hartman does. I mean, to be
Hartman
fair.
Takes too many charges for me. He's too many 50-50 calls. Yeah. He's getting his hands in too much. And the charge block at the end of the game, throw it up. It's a 50-50 call, but he's out if that doesn't go his way. Mm-hmm. There's no free throws on a player control foul. I get that. But if you're thinking of overtime at that spot, that's not a spot you maybe want to do
chance,
that.
Sure.
But a lot of his fouls are reachy, grabby.
Yeah, they're not good.
And they're block charge fouls, which when they come off, they look great. But when they don't, Hartman's got 4 fouls. And Bielfeld's got 4 fouls. And who else had 4? Just about everybody had 4.
Everybody, yeah.
Bryant had 4 fouls.
18 combined fouls from the big men, if you include Hartman in that
but
equation.
But here's the deal. Why was Purdue successful against this team last year? Because they were beating up Emmett Holt. They were beating up Hannah Perea. Mm-hmm. And this is different. You've got a Big Ten body in Max Bielfeld. You've got an almost Big Ten body in Thomas Bryant. You've got a very close Big Ten body in OG.
Mm-hmm.
Juwan Morgan's even a solid guy.
Yep.
When you have, and Hartman has been through the wars in the paint, we've seen for the last year or so. When you have those options, nobody gets tired. Nobody gets worn out. Look at the minutes. 20, 19, 23. I mean, those are great. You're not sending a guy out there because when you get tired, what's the first thing it goes? Your brain.
No, it's a big rotation up front. No question about that.
And
Thomas Bryant, 23, as you mentioned. Colin, 20. 17 for OG. 19 for Max. 8 for Juwan. Again, 18 combined fouls used by the two of them. So
and don't forget,
used effectively.
And don't forget, 34 minutes from Troy Williams, not 19,
absolutely.
Not 21.
Huge.
We've seen those in past games as well. So those are the things when they go right. Indiana is very difficult to beat. We've seen examples of this on the Assembly Hall court, Iowa and Purdue in recent times.
Yep.
2 of the final 3 games are on the road, and things will get a little different.
We will talk about the enigma that is in our favor suddenly this past week. That is Troy Williams when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Quick programming note. Tomorrow night we have Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana. He will have behind the scenes with Associate Athletic Director Eric Neuberger at 6 o'clock live at Yogi's. You will also have Gary Sims of the Edgewood Mustangs, Lady Mustangs. They are the sectional champs, or were the sectional champs, and the conference champs. So all tomorrow night on Joe Smith Sports Talk. And then we're back to high school basketball on Friday night. New Albany comes to town to play North. Chalk Talk, 7 o'clock, and tip-off at 7:30.
That's numero uno, New Albany. Best in the business. And tough way to wrap it up, but a great way to get you ready, set, go for sectional basketball, and we will have it a week from tomorrow night. The Brown County Sectional, the second game on Tuesday night. Owen Valley and Edgewood. Chalk Talk with Dave Mahern at 7 o'clock. John Callahan and Terry Stoltz will have all the action, as Joe will be in Iowa City with the Hoosiers and the Hawkeyes. So good luck. And I believe North plays that night as well.
At East Central.
In East Central. And then South will get the winner of Northeast Central. On Friday night, the 4th, and the other half of that bracket is the Battle for Columbus, as East and North will be the second game on Tuesday, and they will move in to play Shelbyville in the semifinals on Friday, and we'll be in East Central. Joe will get the charter plane to fly over
kidding.
For Friday night's game, and hopefully has to go back on Saturday for a championship. And the game time for Friday, a week from Friday, the East Central sectional, 6 p.m., so that means Chalk Talk at 5:30, so we'll have to adjust some programming. We'll tell you more about that next week.
333-2665 is the phone number. Hoosiers victorious twice at Assembly Hall last week, 80-64 against Nebraska, 77-73 against Purdue on Saturday night. And in the end today, it was announced that Troy Williams was one of the two co-players of the week in the Big Ten, scoring 37 points, averaging 18.5 points a game, 3 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2.5 steals. In those two games, shot 75% and 50% on three-pointers. And look, I refuse to say what this means going forward with Troy because we've seen too much up and down. But wouldn't it be great at this time of the year if you get the upward trend of some sort out of Troy Williams? Because he's such, say it again and again and again, he's such a difference maker and a differentiator for this team compared to so many others because of all the things he can do and his size.
Is Indiana easier to guard with Troy Williams in the lineup or out of the lineup? It's easy. It's a simple, simple question. Troy Williams had one rebound and no fouls against Purdue.
Yeah.
If you told me that before the game started, I'd have been real, real nervous on Indiana's chances.
I'd like to see him on the boards.
Zach Osterman joined me this morning on the morning program, and I asked him the same question. What is the key to unlocking this riddle? And they seem to think at Indiana, you can listen to the interview at WGCLradio.com, that getting him involved defensively is the key. Because we've seen times where putting the head down offensively and taking wild shots or step back threes or things like that, that doesn't always translate. But when he gets his hands active and gets some deflections, knocks the ball away. Well, obviously wasn't on the glass. He had one rebound.
Yeah.
If he's pesky, he saw him diving on the ball for loose ball in the first half, getting the tie up. Those are energy plays and activity plays that sounds like keeps the focus. Also, when you give him space, not necessarily in transition, but even in the half court, when he doesn't have to make basketball difficult, when he can go to the rack, when
take
he can
the ball, just, take
and,
his
and,
man,
and dunk all over everybody, or hit the reverse layups like you saw against Nebraska, or make the simple pass. He's not a terrible passer. Sometimes he puts a little much too heat on it.
Well, what he needs to work on he needs to work on his ball handling.
Sure.
Because they do put the ball in his hands and they do ask him to take his man off the dribble, whether it's around a screen or a high screen or whatever it is. He had no turnovers. He had four steals and two assists. He was
four
active.
Four steals is great.
But you're right. He has started this year, and it started earlier in the year. He has started this year with looking a lot more to pass the ball when he takes someone one-on-one than he does to simply go to the rack. Now, of course, he's going to do that also, but he made some very good decisions with the ball the other night.
There it is. And when he's locked into the game, as Tom Crean tells us, he is very difficult to handle. Why? Because he can affect the game in so many ways. He doesn't affect the game sitting on the bench, and that's the hard part because, frankly, the Iowa game was a great example. The Penn State game was a great example. When he started off those halves on Planet Troy, Indiana was hurt. They were giving up layups. They were taking quick shots. You remember the Iowa game? The first 2 minutes of the game in the second half, it's bad decision, bad decision, bad decision. There were four bad decisions in 2 minutes, in four possessions. And the same thing at Penn State, if I remember correctly. It didn't get off to a flying start where he has to go sit down. And then Indiana has to switch. Then Indiana has to find other ways to get through that. But when he's on the floor, he's disruptive. He is that wild card. He is that X factor. You don't know if he's going to run from behind 35 feet away and block your shot. You don't know if he's going to run from 30 feet out and dunk the ball over you on a putback. Indiana doesn't have a lot of those other options floating around that can do all that. People will say, well, look at OG. Well, OG's a freshman. Can you give him a break? Yeah. Can we just let OG grow up a little bit for a minute?
Before we make him a 38-point
rebounds OG had against Purdue? He had one. Yeah. I mean, that's good. He had the putback dunk and everybody went crazy. He's athletic. He is. It's great. It's great to have multiple guys in multiple positions. Would you rather lean on a junior that's played almost every single game in his career or a guy that's just starting to find some greener pastures here in the last couple weeks?
Well, obviously the
answer is both.
The junior has to come in. I mean, that's the key
of
the whole thing.
If the junior doesn't play, you have to go another direction.
And this week he did. 333-2665 is the phone number. And again, this team, to me, yes, you've got the senior point guard. Yes, you've got, I wouldn't say phenomenal size up front, but you're making it work. And you got bodies, and you made that work really well against Purdue. You're starting to get maybe a little thin in the backcourt, but the differentiator between this team being a pretty good team and a really good potentially team is Troy Williams because of so many things he can do.
And don't worry about the backcourt stuff. That's just numbers.
Well, now you've got Robert Johnson hobbled.
That's fine.
That's a concern.
And James Blackman was hobbled, and look what Indiana's done since he's been hurt. They're leading the league. The point is there are no positional values where you say, oh, geez, there's not a two guard to put in there.
Sure.
You can move this offense around. You've seen it. You saw Thomas Bryant standing at the top of the key against another 7-footer.
Well, I guess that's the good news with what they've been doing. As far as being diverse about this whole thing.
These interchangeable parts.
But we think more about that on defense than we do on offense, it would seem to me.
But the offensive part is simple because the Troy factor can help. He was 8 of 9 against Nebraska and 7-11 against Purdue. Mm-hmm. That's 15-20.
Yeah.
Where there's no damage being done. He missed 5 shots in, 28 minutes and 34 minutes.
No, he wasn't just nice. He was really good.
Ta-da!
Yeah, I mean.
That's what the decision-making was good. You don't know if it's because Boo Williams came into town and got him fired up. I don't know. Maybe he needed a pep talk. It's working. You'd like to see a little bit more productivity on the glass. He had 4 turnovers against Nebraska. That's part of it. But he didn't have any against Purdue, and that's part of it as well. When you make better decisions, when you don't get down alleys, and maybe the good news was Haas and Hammonds weren't there. Maybe that changed it. Maybe that focused it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And to see that, read it, and recognize it, instead of going there wildly out of control, hoping you get a foul, better decisions were made.
Well, and going across the lane instead of at the rim.
Across the lane's fine when you're not shooting.
Well, but he's usually shooting.
That's a part of it. But when Troy gets – he's quick enough to get people off the dribble. Not a lot of – we don't have that besides Yogi for the most part. So he helps break down defenses. And how do you get better open shots? Somebody has to help. Or you're going to let Troy finish at the rim?
Yeah.
Good luck with that. He's a really good finisher when he gets up in that stratosphere. So to have him play this way is fantastic. Yes, Robert Johnson is hurt to a degree. We have no idea what that is going to be. Indiana's not going to say anything until you see warm-ups Thursday night at Illinois. But the good news is they have moved these pieces on the chessboard before. This is not something they have to, oh my gosh, this is a late season. What do we do if Johnson can't go? Well, it's pretty simple. Zeislav's going to get more minutes. Nigo's going to have to come off the bench and spell. Yogi's playing 38 anyhow, but here's the key. We're leaving this out because we just assume it. If Troy is Troy, it's okay.
It's a nice time for that to happen.
You can slide him and Hartman together at the 2/3 and let them interchange and do all that.
They'll play together.
And look how much bigger they get. That offensive rebounding, the defensive rebounding, all those other things – that can help you out as well. But you hope Johnson's okay. Why? Because you want all hands on deck this time of year. That's why wouldn't you? That would be silly to say anything differently. So he was in a walking boot, with one crutch hopping down Kirkwood yesterday. My guess would be less than 24 hours after injuring it, if he's hopping around Kirkwood with his buddies.
Right.
The severity of it from a severe, not severe angle, ipso facto would suggest he's not sitting up with his leg up in the air all day, laying off it.
Because it's all swollen and nasty.
He's down. He's outside enjoying a very nice day. Now, does that mean he can play basketball on it? No, that's a totally different thing. Playing Big Ten basketball and walking down Kirkwood with a walking boot's a little bit different.
Can we reiterate, was the sun shining when he was walking down Kirkwood?
Absolutely. It was a great picture.
Okay,
if you want to go to Twitter, you can see it.
We just don't want him out at 1 in the morning.
No. It was
333-2665 is the phone number. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and when we get back, not a great start against Nebraska, but an awfully good end of the first half.
Hey, wasn't a very good start against Purdue either, was it?
And made it happen. But either way, two pair of victories, and we will look back on Nebraska when we get back. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Hoosiers victorious twice last week at the Assembly Hall, remaining now a half game ahead of Iowa in first place in the Big Ten with 3 to play. At Illinois on Thursday, at Iowa next Tuesday, not tomorrow night. And then the following weekend, Maryland at home, that may be the big clincher. So those last two, Iowa, Maryland, the other two teams up there at the top. Huge, huge stretch here down the stretch, of course, for the Hoosiers. But they had to win these two to get there, and they did exactly that. 333-2665, again, is our phone number. Let's bring in John.
Hello, John.
What's happening, John?
Hey, guys. Let's play a little game here. Let's pretend. I'm going to pretend I'm a rabid Michigan basketball fan, and you both of you guys are Michigan coach John Boeheim. Both of you.
All right.
I'm going to ask you the same question. why did you let a guy like Max Bietzelt, who had proven he could play in this league as a quality reserve if nothing else, leave your program in favor of a couple of young guys that haven't done anything because you have a numbers crunch? And I'd like somebody to justify to me, as a Michigan fan, if I was one, and I'm glad this didn't happen because he's been a godsend for us, but I'm just curious to wonder, experience is so valued by coaches in this league. They talk about it all the time, especially guys who play this league. Why you would cut a guy loose, and he's playing the best ball of his career right now. Now, that either means one of two things. Either Boeheim, what I always hear, is a much better coach than Tom Crean. Isn't a better coach than Tom Crean. I don't think he is anyway, but our Crean is doing a lot better job than people want to give him credit for with some of these guys.
It's a, let's be fair about one thing here. It's a two-way street with a player and improvement. The coach has got to be decent at giving you the tools to improve, but then you've got to make the work happen. And this is why, in my opinion, you don't hear the coach here, Coach Crean, talk a lot about all the great work Troy Williams does off the court, like he does with people like Yogi and used to with OG or with OG and used to with, you know, Zeller and Victor Oladipo and guys like that. Because you've got to go through that. You have to make that work happen. So it is possible that while he was at Michigan, he simply didn't apply himself to the level that he's applied himself in this offseason. It's possible that Coach Crean is pushing him harder than Boeheim did. I don't know that. But it is a two-way street. So he saw him for 4 years, or at least three and a half at that point, and said, you know what, I think we're going to move on with these young guys and see what we can get out of them.
Have you seen their young guys other than Donald and Doyle? What have they done?
Well, it's clear at this moment that he got it wrong. That doesn't mean that Max was doing great and he shouldn't have let him go necessarily from their standpoint. But right now it's blown up in his face, no question.
Well, what's blown up? I mean, if Max Bielefeld stayed at Michigan and people keyed on him for 34 minutes a game, does Max Bielefeld put up the numbers he does playing 19 minutes a game at Indiana?
If he's their main big guy, no.
But he'd be one of three. They'd have Donnell and Doyle in there, too. I wouldn't expect him to be a star. I just thought that he would be.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You can put the shoe on the other.
Like he's at Indiana.
You can put the shoe on the other foot. Why do you let Matt Roth go without letting him play his last year? Why do you let Maurice Creek go without letting him play his last year?
Let's remember, too. I mean, with the Matt Roth situation, we desperately needed shooting the next year.
And we didn't
have it because he was gone.
Guys get it right. Guys get it wrong. But I think the thing, to be fair, is we don't know all the details to that. But Bielefeld could be this. He could be that. Who knows? That's for Max and
Again,
and Boeheim
to me, if Boeheim saw him for 3.5 years and told him they were going to go in another direction. Well, but when he told him this, before the season.
Yeah.
So you saw him for 3.5 years up there at Michigan, and you said, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction after this season. There's got to be a reason for that, as opposed to one summer and the fall where now he's done something completely different.
Yeah.
And you know, Boeheim likes to have shooters. Well, Max wasn't much of an outside shooter up there either. So he's added that.
And he's got new freedom, and he's got, again.
I'm not going to tell you it was the smartest move Boeheim's ever made.
I'm going to give you a golf analogy on this. Butch Harmon is not known as one of the great technical teachers of golf, but everybody that goes and works with Butch Harmon gets better because Butch makes you believe you're better. And sometimes that's what it is. I mean, you have to have some talent, obviously, and to play in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. You have to be recruited. You have to do that. Gotcha. And some guys buy into the IU mystique, John. You've been around long enough where guys transfer in or leave and go somewhere else and don't do anything. And you think, well, geez, why were they going to be at IU? But, yeah, Max Bielefeld's been great. And moving forward, if he continues to play the way he does, I don't think Max – you don't need anything more from Max. I think Max just needs to be Max right now.
Everything you wanted to get.
Everything and more that we hope for.
And that's it.
And, well, the reason I'm asking this question is one of my neighbors is a Michigan grad and a big Michigan fan. And he voiced the same thing. And he has talked to people up there and said – The one thing you can rule out, he was not a pain in the rear.
Okay. If that's what it is.
And that was not why they got rid. They just thought the potential of these guys was better. They needed to play in. So you've been here 4 years.
When Boeheim got asked about it before we played up there, he got awfully chippy about it.
Yep.
So, you know, he doesn't want to badmouth the kid. There's no question about it. But again, he saw him for 3.5 years. So maybe he didn't work the way he wanted to. I don't know.
So it's not like I get that far. But coaches always talk about experience. How you need that, how valuable it is in a program, blah, blah, and they do it
We can guess till we're blue in the
face. They want talent before they want experience.
That's
maybe
exactly
they thought they
right.
were getting more talent.
That's exactly
or
right.
Or would you rather have Cameron Chapman right now than Max Bietzelt?
Oh, it's not even a question. It's not even a question.
And for
them, John, as you've seen, they're hurting at that position too. I mean, so that amplifies it on their side. It's perfect for us because we were hurting
a
bit too.
There was no guy in there that you could say, "Oh, he's going to be dangerous if he."
No, it's not like they chose Caleb Swanigan instead of Max Bielefeld.
Exactly.
Caris LeVert hasn't played in about 15 games, and they're over 500 in the league. So I'll give him a little credit there. Caris LeVert's a really good player, not having him do anything. But, yeah, one man's trash is another man's treasure or whatever that is. And we're not saying Max is trash. That's just a turn of a phrase.
Again, to me, when a coach – when you see a guy for 3.5, 4 years, you know what they're like. And they something made them decide to go a different direction and go with more unknown as opposed to the experience. The only thing I can think of is that maybe he just hadn't applied himself off the court in you know, training and things the way they had hoped. And so they were going to go with a younger guy
who
they could.
Would he gain 6 inches on his vertical leap when he got here?
Sure, Zach has done it here.
Tom Crean couldn't
wait
to tell us all
about
that.
And he gets lauded for it constantly, which, again, Crean doesn't blow smoke up a lot of these guys' butts just to do it.
But all the coaches like to prove they're right, just like John Beilein doesn't want to talk about it when he gets it wrong.
Yeah.
So it's good for Indiana basketball, John. There's no doubt about it. There's 3 games left, 2 of them on the road. Can we transfer what we've seen at the Assembly Hall this last 5 days to Illinois and to Iowa to win the league?
Illinois is a really desperate team. I think they're going to be making a lot of changes over there.
Illinois, just briefly.
Or not.
Illinois,
you better be able to guard the drivers because that's what Hill and Nunn will like to do that.
Yeah. Take their spirit.
If they can withstand the first 7 or 8 minutes of that game.
Yeah. Take their spirit away early and Illinois will fold.
John, and Illinois led yesterday by 13 with 12:22 to go at Wisconsin. So it's not like they are terrible. And you can't fall asleep at the wheel. And that's,
no, and they beat Purdue, but they were tied at Purdue at half and they beat them by 14 points in the second half.
84 points.
It's not like you can walk over there like I think Indiana did at Penn State. I think they hopefully will.
Why did they do that? Why did they think they could walk over to Penn State and do that after the Michigan performance? I mean, so again, here's Indiana ranked the highest they've been ranked in some time. Here's Indiana off 2 wins in a row. Here's Indiana with
going
the return of Troy Williams.
Illini.
Is the football being – I mean, Penn State was 2-8.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
exactly right.
This wasn't 8-6 Penn State beating Indiana. This was 2-8 Penn State.
I mean, they're not unique in doing this. Iowa went and lost to Penn State, and Maryland lost to winless Maryland's,
sure.
or Minnesota, rather. So
it happens.
It happens. But
they know what they had of them. It's up to them to do what they have to
You're exactly right. We will cheer like heck for them, but, John, they have to do it. No one's going to put the ball in the basket for them. No one's going to run hard back on defense for them. No one's going to make sure they identify their shooters for them. And on the road, it's usually a tougher thing to do it at home, but you got to beat 4-10. You got to beat 4-10 teams. You're going to win the league, right?
Exactly right. And don't feel bad for Illinois. That's their problem.
Oh, never,
that's,
never, John.
Hard to do, John. Good job.
we just hope they keep John Gross.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No,
thanks,
problem.
Guys.
Thanks
All
for
right,
the call,
always
John.
Good stuff from
we
John.
Appreciate it. And there's the music. That means we got to head on out of here.
A little bit of time here to wrap things up.
Yeah, and here's the good news. The Hoosiers do have it in front of them. They do have the other 2 teams at the top with them, Iowa and Maryland, still to go. And it really is just one game at a time, because if you lose at Illinois, then you really put your pressure on you, and you've got to win at Iowa. And you'd like to win at Iowa anyways.
And then
but let's take care of Illinois.
Win at Maryland.
Against Maryland,
home.
No question.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
so
remember,
take care of the one you should, without a question.
Unbeaten at home doesn't mean anything when you're playing for a conference
That's
championship.
Exactly right.
Not in my
Still
book.
Still got to play it.
Still got to play it.
Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday to preview that trip to Illinois. Remember, tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana at 6 o'clock here on WGCL. And we will join you again Wednesday, 6 o'clock. We'll talk to you then. You've been in the zone.